Hi, Sarah.
Fiona, you're alive. How are you? Did the police?
They're sending me down, but I don't want to talk about that. Let's enjoy our last day together. How's the finding your inner child going?
I've had a whale of a time. I've been creating new sounds. Listen. And how about this one?
What's that?
Umbrella and a tangerine. Amazing, eh? Next, I'm gonna mix this down and then...
Brilliant, Sarah. Totally brilliant. But Teddy looks a bit tired after all that Foley work. No, that means only one thing.
You're right. I need to be sensible. I'll put Teddy to bed. And then pub time, right?
First round's on me.
Mine's a tequila sunrise with an umbrella. Hurrah!
Welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Fiona.
And I'm Sarah. And this week we are live from the Tower of London, where Fiona is basically going to spend a very long time thinking about all those bad sketches she subjected you to. And she wrote to them that put her here for crimes against entertainment.
You wrote some of them as well.
Fiona, you don't want the beef eaters to hear, do we? Now, remember what we said? I've still got those pictures of you from that podcast meetup in London. And unless you want me to share them...
No. Okay. Whoa, this is a kid-friendly show, remember? And on that note, children's audio. What is out there, Sarah?
Well, we have been lucky enough to speak to two people for this specific episode. Michelle LaFrance, who's the founder and managing director of The Owlfield. It's written by Domian de Groot. It's a very immersive binaural show. And Jonathan Messenger, who's a writer, producer and actor in The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian, which is edited by his wonderful son, Griff. When pressed, they describe it as a mystery gang story, sort of like Scooby-Doo meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer in space. and that's by the Gen Z media and Gen Z kids, or Z. I don't know what Americans say. Is it Z or Z? I don't know. Anyway, we've explored the charts as well, haven't we, lately?
Indeed we have. And today, on the 9th of October 2017, the top children's shows in the UK iTunes charts are... Up there is Wow in the World, Discovery Adventures, Story Nori, Brains On, CBeebies Radio, Storytime, Story Podcast, Tumble Science Podcast, Unexplainable Disappearance of Mars Patel, that sounds good, Story Pirates Podcast, Sherlock Holmes, and Story Home Children's Audio.
That's so many. This is good. And that's in the top 20. It's in the kids and family section. So that alongside, you know, things about mummy's pregnancy diaries and, you know, other family matters shows, I think shows that, you know, there is a healthy mix of story shows, kind of, you know, it's a burgeoning industry. But I think the shows are more in their tens rather than their hundreds or thousands, which would be, you know, a lot better for example, representation and new voices and mixture of genres as well, it seems.
That's good cross-promotion, though, isn't it, with the sort of pregnancy and baby yoga and all that kind of thing. Get them in early.
Well, this is it.
You know,
and I think,
into audio drama.
Yeah, and the only way that you're going to get kids to be listening to it is if you educate the parents how to get into it first. And there's a few shows, isn't there, on our forum, made by people on our forum, which are kind of linked with different age groups for kids. So I had a very brief discussion with Scooter from Anansi's Storytime, and he said that that's mainly for older kids, but he doesn't want to write specifically for a kids market because some of the content is, you know, a bit more tough for younger kids to understand. But obviously we have Rick Coast and Mariella Reneker's team at Wireless Audio have also got a kids section, which I've been really racing through on there. And Michelle LaFrance, who we hear from later on as well, has got some wonderful shows out there.
He has indeed. Yeah, the fairy tree in the Owlfield is astonishing binaural. It's an experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of...
I mean, as an adult, it's a brilliant thing to enjoy that immersive experience, really.
Absolutely.
And we did a little couple of polls on our Facebook forums.
Yeah.
And I guess the general gist of that, there were about 49 shows that people could name that were for kids. Mm-hmm. But those 49 shows were named by just 5 people. So just think of what we might have had if there were even more people who could have contributed to that. And mostly thank you very much from Craig Robotham. And we were going to interview him for these children's audio things, but unfortunately technical difficulties meant that he couldn't join us this time. But we will catch up with you, Craig. We will.
That would be cool. Yeah. And what productive people the people are who make children's audio drama. Oh,
amazing. Yeah.
Congratulations, folks. It's really good that you're doing it.
Yes, yes. And I think the main shows that were picked up that people know about for children were the Mars Patel has already been mentioned. There's the Red Panda Adventures, Eleanor Amplified, Finn Caspian, which we've just mentioned, something about Dr. Floyd. I've suddenly forgotten the actual title of that. But Dr. Floyd Adventures or some such. And then the Discovery Adventures, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a moment. But there's been some fun news, haven't there, out of Panoply in the last little while.
Yes, indeed. You can pay £7.99 for a month of ad-free shows there. So that is, if you add it up over a month, you can probably get a lot of entertainment out of that.
It's great that they're, that means they're specifically children's shows as well, isn't it? They're done by Pinna, P-I-N-N-A. Have a little Google and see. Mm. And they're basically aiming to, yes, get a lot more children's content out there, it seems, with ads in there that are for adults, really. So it's quite interesting that they are obviously understanding that most good parents, I guess, might well be listening with their children as well and enjoying the stories too. And so, yes, they kind of said they'd do an announcement to say, and this bit's for the adults, and then they don't sell them, I don't know, sock things or something for cooking. And so I think it is quite interesting, that kind of development for children's audio especially.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, in fact, there's another audio collection at Kids Listen, which, if you've got an iPad or an iPhone, it's an app which downloads more than 30 podcasts of all kinds of different genres, again, all aimed purely at children. This one is, again, it's pay, and it depends where you live as to how much it costs and whether you're a new member. But from what I can gather, it's about $3.99 per month for all of those podcasts. So if you're interested, go and check that out too.
Yep.
And this is a quick insert from me just to say we've had some breaking news about Panoply Media and Gen Z Media that we talked about just earlier on in our conversation. They have completed a partnership to develop and produce podcasts for young listeners. So this deal will include a second season of The Unexplainable Disappearance of Mars Patel. And Ben Strauss, Gen Z's CEO, has said that he's absolutely thrilled. Panoply understands the importance of kids' programming to the future of podcasting, and their support gives us the freedom to focus on producing great audio content for tweens and young adults. So that covers pretty much everyone, I hope, in age terms. And so maybe something like Owlfield might even find a place somewhere like that. So do keep your eyes out for developments there. And Sarah will keep you updated in future episodes.
And we were looking as well at how business is kind of coming in on the bandwagon as well with the Land Over Discovery adventures.
Fantastic. Yes, they're done by our Overcoats favourites, David K. Barnes and Tom Crowley. And you can listen in the car, and it's all on location. It's binaural to encourage families to go off the beaten track and enjoy their own adventures. Yeah. So, yeah, it's that kind of commercial and creative combination coming together.
I might go and approach Virgin and say, would you like me to do some train adventures for you?
That would be fantastic. Wouldn't it?
Everybody should think this is your branding chance, folks. Just try and find some businesses you think would need something, and let's go out there and make it for kids and get them enjoying their train journeys across Britain, or, you know, cycling from London to Brighton with a podcast in your ear.
Adventures in chocolate eating. Yes, I can definitely see myself approaching some of these places, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in further discussion with Michel Lefranc outside of our interview, I think after looking at specific articles that have come out lately, some things are suggesting that these children's stories would replace the children's bedtime story time that parents would have with their kids. And
no.
I think it's not the case. I mean, for example, we read the story either that's, you know, his own personal choice of our library at home, of which, of course, there's thousands of books. And the other aspect of, you know, the school book that you kind of encouraged to read 10 minutes a night and so on. So at least, yeah, so alongside that, we listened to something. So I don't think that that reportage is correct. I think it's quite misleading that it would take away that reading time. I really do, because obviously any decent parent knows that that's very, very important.
Yes, of course. And I mean, the radio has been around for, well, decades, hasn't it now? And children haven't given up books yet. So I really don't think it's going to, you know, be an issue.
This is it. You know, even the Kindle couldn't take a real feel of a real book away from people, could it?
Definitely not.
I know Amazon will hate us for saying that, but
and the thing with audio is that you can take it on car and plane journeys, inspire imaginations. Because if you have children who get car sick if they read, and I get car sick if I read, especially when I'm driving, it's terrible. No, I don't drive, by the way. But if they get car sick, then actually listening is a brilliant way of keeping them entertained.
Mm, yeah. And yeah, I think there's a lot more accessibility, isn't there? Perhaps kids over the age of 10, 11 going to secondary school might well have their own phone, which, you know, you can put a podcast app on and you can put all the potential things in place to stop them from accessing things that they shouldn't. So, yeah, I think there's a lot more potential for getting that audience really widespread across the younger generations.
And then, of course, getting them to create their own as well, because it is possible, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
It isn't a hobby that you would need to splash out a lot of money on. It could be done fairly cheaply with a, you know, fairly cheap microphone and free sound effects and free software.
Yes. Yes, we'll be looking at that in a few episodes' time, actually, all your home recording setups. So, yes, watch this space for more info on that if you're intrigued. But, yeah, I think also the interactive nature of shows for kids as well, you know, is the fact that, you know, with communication, maybe, you know, as a kid, you might have wanted to go and get a Blue Peter badge as a kid by doing some kind of some kind of little picture or response to some competition. But here, you know, you can actually get on programs these days and phone in, like in Finn Caspian, they have kids who are fans ringing in to give ideas and saying hello to characters and just giving some potentials as to what could happen next and that kind of thing, as well as sending in, you know, fan art, essentially. And yeah, and I absolutely love that. You know, they can really get involved if they know that they've spoken directly to these characters within the piece. So yeah, I absolutely love that. And you know, my son was absolutely wetting himself at the jokes that these kids were saying. So yeah, you know, it is all good to have that interaction. And it is perhaps, you know, if they can listen to children of their age, as well as have the other experience of adults playing children that they're listening to, I think there's quite a lot of scope for creativity in that, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, without further ado, shall we listen to our interview with Michel Lefranc?
I think that's a marvellous idea.
Hello and welcome. We are absolutely delighted to welcome Michel Lefranc to our studio, I was going to say.
One day.
To ask some questions about children's audio drama. Welcome, first of all.
Yes, hello, welcome.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, thanks for having me. Happy to be in your virtual studio.
Cool. And do you want to start off, first of all, by explaining to anyone who's not heard of you and what you do, who you are and what programs you work on?
Yeah, sure. So, I'm Michel Lefranc. I am the founder and managing director of The Owl Field, which is a company specializing in binaural audio drama. And so the format is really placing the listener as the story's central character. And from a first-person perspective, everything that happens in the story happens around the listener in a 3D audio soundscape. So it's really making the listener feel part of the story in terms of the narrative, and surrounded by the story in this immersive soundscape. And we produce content over various genres. And today we're talking about children's.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And just to say as well that, of course, this is welcoming you back for the second time, because, of course, you were back with Matthew and Robert back in, was it episode 68, I think, of the podcast, talking about binaural. So if anyone does want to listen to more about how you make that, then please go and listen to that one as well.
Yeah. So regarding your programmes that you make, what specific shows have you got that are children-oriented out with the Outfield at the moment?
Well, I've got two productions that I've done so far. The first was called Savvy and Wonder Hair. Mm-hmm. And that's a series for ages about 3 to 5. It's kind of in the same vein as Dora the Explorer, in that you have an adventure that you go on, you learn things along the way, yeah, and by the end you've kind of accomplished a goal. And there's a bit of participation in there as well. By having the listener be a character in a story, the other characters can address the listener and have them participate. For instance, the characters might need to, say, turn on a robot or something. So a character might ask the listener's character, okay, how many batteries do we have to put in the robot? Mm-hmm. Like 1, 2, or 3? And then, there's a short pause where presumably the child is responding. Yeah. And then the characters will say, okay, let's try it and put the batteries in and see if that worked and stuff. So regardless of what the child says, they end up feeling like they gave the correct answer. So there's an educational angle there, and they learn about different topics. And so that was an original episode I did, and now I'm producing 5 more episodes for the series. And, there's different topics like robotics and biology and music and astronomy. So there's that educational side. The other big one is called The Fairy Tree.
Yeah.
And that was kind of ages 8 and up or so. Mm-hmm. And that was actually quite fascinating, in that the concept was an interactive choose your path narrative,
yes,
which in the past, those are kind of reserved for children, maybe 8 to 13 or so.
Mm.
But I had kind of wanted it to, I wanted to create a version that was still compelling for adults. Mm. And it made it a bit trickier to get the choices right. So it was to be in the fantasy genre. So naturally I hired Domine de Groot to write it.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And that ended up being a fantastic decision, because not only did he create a wonderful story world, but he was essential in ensuring some of my more mature ideas were in fact family friendly. I talked a bit about this. Actually, we did a podcast together about the writing of The Fairy Tree, which is on his Audio Epics site. But I definitely had original ideas that were a bit too inappropriate for children. I think one of them was about whether or not you leave someone to die.
Wow.
Which,
big things,
especially
yeah,
in audio drama, to hear the actor maybe begging you to save them as you leave them behind might be a bit much for a child.
Possibly.
So I wasn't always too sure where the line was, but it's tough because you've got to give kids credit for their maturity these days, right? It's much tougher to shield them from the world now.
Sadly,
so
yes,
it's increasingly difficult to know exactly what is age appropriate.
Yeah, and how do you decide exactly what kind of age bracket you are aiming for?
I kind of base it on what's out there already. So, exactly like looking at Dora the Explorer or Sesame Street or whatever it is, whatever's kind of close enough, I'll say, well, that's about the right age group. Mm-hmm. I tend to lean a bit on the cautious side, even with my more mature productions. I'll maybe make something that has even just a little bit of blood. I'll say, oh, it's 18 plus, I don't want to get in trouble with people. So to be honest, The Fairy Tree could probably, 6 and up is probably okay. But there's a scary orc and troll and things like that.
Yep.
So yeah, we just said 8 to be safe.
And what decisions did you make? So obviously you've kind of got a specific idea of your experience of those kind of demographic. So what did you make decision-wise with those character types and the structure and style of the piece aiming specifically at that demographic?
Well, certainly for Savvy and Wonder Hair, everyone's very friendly and happy. It's very much a children's story. Mm. I didn't want to take certainly no risks in that regard there. The Fairy Tree, we didn't, again, it was, very much thanks to Domine's wisdom in that regard. But I think that we didn't really do anything with the characters that was less than we would have done with a mature production.
Mm-hmm.
It was more the choices that we were a bit concerned about. But, you know, we've got, there is violence, there is fighting in there. And that's maybe why we cautioned to say it was eight and up. But I don't think we did too much with the characters in making sure they were age appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed it. And I'm a little bit over the demographic you kind of aimed it for. So, yeah. And with the kind of the lengths of those episodes as well, and the lengths of sort of the seasons that you've chosen, was the fact that it was a children's audio piece affecting that decision process?
I mean, The Fairy Tree was meant to be kind of feature length, but the length of a movie as well. I didn't concern myself too much in that regard. That was just a length that we ended up going with in terms of the budget as well. But for Savvy and Wonder Hair, I think it is preferable to go with the shorter lengths. They're about 15 minutes each, because it can give, you know, if the kids want to listen to a lot, I think this applies to all audio drama, really. If you've got these short bursts, you know, people can really choose to listen to as many as they want or as little as they want. And if they only have, say, a short period, then like even just a break at work or something like that, they can pop one in and get it to the conclusion without having to stop, you know, midway through an episode. So, you know, I don't think everything should be 15 minutes or anything, but I think for children specifically, it helps a lot that, you know, they can listen to 2 hours worth if they want, and they'll have lots of different adventures in there, but they've got the option to have, from start to finish, a full story.
Cool. And with the genre, you chose fantasy, which obviously appeals to children a lot. Do you think kids' audio has representation in all genres? Is there any kind of genre you'd like to work in next?
I do like fantasy quite a bit. Most of, you know, the books I read and everything are fantasy. So I would probably continue in that. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing about Savvy and Wonder Hair, and you see that as well with maybe a lot of these anthology shows, podcasts, it gives you an option to play around with different situations and scenarios, take the kids to different places and all these things. If you're in one specific genre, then you're already a little bit restricted in there. So that's why Savvy and Wonder Hair is it's a detective thing. So you can investigate, how do robots work? You can investigate, you know, in one of the episodes, we go into outer space and meet all the planets. So there's so many different things you can do if it's more of a variety show than if it's stuck in one genre. But I think, again, it depends on the age group you're going for. But it's an interesting dynamic when you're marketing this kind of thing, in that the children grow up, right? So if you're only producing content for ages 3 to 5, then you've only got that two-year window, right, before customers move on. The parents and the children move on from your product. So you're constantly needing to acquire new customers, which is far more difficult than retaining existing ones. So Harry Potter is a good example in that the stories get more mature each book, right? So the story matures as the kids do, so that the both the kids and the parents don't necessarily move on right away. And that's something that you can get when you've got a fantasy story like that, or a specific genre where you can stick with the characters as they mature, which maybe for something like Savvy and Wonder Hair, you want to stick with that same age group so you can produce a full array of individual stories for the kids.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how do you market to that specific demographic? What do you do to get those children to listen?
Well, of course, you don't market directly to children, firstly, because it's difficult to reach them anyways, with all the firewalls protecting children, and rightly so. But you don't really want to market to children anyways, because best case scenario, you know, what, you've convinced a child to nag their parents to buy them something. It's not a positive experience for anyone. So, but I find marketing to children kind of distasteful anyways, because kids don't have no concept of what advertising is. So you do market to the parents, which in itself it's not any more difficult. Aside from children's entertainment being an extremely crowded market, parents are often actively seeking quality entertainment for kids, especially something with that educational angle.
Yep, definitely.
So they're there and they want it, but there is that dynamic there where you've got to decide, you know, does the work get more mature or not?
And do you try out your work on children or sort of friends and family before you publish it? What kind of feedback are you getting sort of along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you always start out with, you know, nieces and nephews and your friends' kids and kind of abuse them that way. The beauty of kids, of course, is that they're very, very honest, right? They're not shy with their feedback. So most of the time, when you're asking your friends and your family for feedback on your art, they'll encourage you full stop, right? So it's not always useful. It's not always constructive. But kids are very, very honest. Well, the only problem with the feedback you get from kids is that they don't always understand or can't articulate their reasons for their tastes.
Right. Sure.
So, for example, if you've got maybe like a story with a bear, the child might say like, well, I didn't like the bear. And so you're like, okay, all right. What didn't you like about the bear? And they just go, I don't know. And then they run away and you don't know what to do other than to remove the bear entirely. So you kind of got to decipher their feedback. But actually, I've got a great relationship with the RNIB in Edinburgh, which is the Royal National Institute for the Blind. And they've got a youth group there with a wide range of ages, which has been fantastic. They've been really welcoming because, of course, the organizers are always looking for new things for the kids, for new resources. And it's been really beneficial for myself to get feedback on a personal kind of individual level. Like I get to talk to the children, you know, right after they've listened
Superb,
to it.
Yeah.
So they were the first to hear Savvy and Wonderhair. They were the first to hear the Fairy Tree. They even, you know, tested the navigation on the phone for the Fairy Tree Interactive app, which was important. I really wanted to make sure that worked for people with sight loss as well. And they're just a great bunch. They've all got different personalities. So that relationship has been really invaluable.
Excellent. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And you mentioned the choose your own path one. How successful has that been as a model, would you say?
Well, the goal for the OWL field is reaching the kind of ultimate level of immersion. That's always been my goal. And so adding the choose your path narrative and the personalization was all about adding to that. And the narrative in making the listener feel like it was their journey, and the personalization just adding to the effect of feeling in the story world. I have to say the feedback we've got is, especially from the kids who purchased the personalized version, it's just amazing. I mean, when a child says, this is going to sound cheesy or something, but when a child says, I didn't know stories could be like this in just the most genuine way, it's just great stuff. You know?
And how is it personalized? So what have you done there to make that a reality?
Personalization was done by recording. So we took some pre-orders. We kind of put a little low cap on there because we didn't know how much. You know, we had a general idea of the cost and time it would take to do, but we didn't want to get in over our heads. So we put a cap on that, but we took pre-orders.
Yep.
And the parents or the children literally just sent in their child's name. And we literally just had the actors record the lines and then created individual products for those children.
Exciting.
That's basically it.
So combined with the sort of immersiveness, that it must be quite mind-blowing, actually, yeah.
Yeah, to feel like you're in the story and surrounded by the story world in 3D, and then to have the actual characters in the story voice your actual real-life name. Again, it was just about really deepening the immersion.
So, yes, for those writers who are aiming to create the same kind of positioning of their listener right in the middle of the action, what techniques would you use to get them to explore that avenue?
To have the listener feel like they're in the action?
Yes.
What advice would I give?
Yes.
Well, I suppose it depends on what your goals are. If you want to have the listener feel like they're experiencing the story from a first-person perspective or from inside a character's head or something, that's more about, you know, whether or not you want to work with maybe narration of a for instance, giving the character thoughts and things like that, because that ends up being more narration, I suppose. I don't like narration. I try to avoid it as much as possible, so I prefer to, especially with the 3D audio, obviously is to make the listener feel like they themselves are in the story. So things like, you know, not giving that, you know, not having any of the other characters specifically speak a name that might draw you out of it, take you out of it. You know, if your character is named Lucy, you know, every time somebody says Lucy, you're like, well, I'm not Lucy. So that would remove it a bit. avoiding any kind of description as well, you know, saying mm-hmm. like, well, you're old, you know, just like, well, I'm a child. So things like that, just taking into account, you know, if you want to have the listener feel like they're in the story, just avoiding kind of anything that would make them feel like, well, that's not me.
Right. Yeah. Fantastic.
How much of what you're doing do you feel is educational and how much entertainment, and how do you balance that, or is it even necessary to put educational things in there?
It's not necessary, but I do think that I would separate it with age groups, I think, mm-hmm. Especially because you're marketing to parents. I think that with parents of younger children, they're always looking for educational things. Mm-hmm. And it's reflected in the market. I mean, in the US, the audiobook market for children is not even 10% mm-hmm. of market share.
Really?
It does better in Europe and it does better in the UK, but it does still do fine in the educational sector, like schools and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing stuff for children of a younger age, then, you know, having some kind of educational angle is a lot more accessible and marketable,
right.
I think. Whereas with the fairy tree, you know, there's really not any kind of education in there. That was mostly just fantastical entertainment, I suppose.
Yeah.
So if you were able to encourage new writers and producers of this specific children's audio genre, what should they consider before starting out in the kids' audio extravaganza?
Well, I think again, it's about your goals. It's obviously incredibly rewarding to work on children's stuff, especially when you get that feedback.
Yeah.
You know, you hear the kids say that, or even the parents will tell you that, you know, they're sitting there quietly for the first time. You know, usually when they listen to something that's audio only, they'll fidget and things like that. But when you've got audio drama, you know, they'll really listen more so than if it's just a narrator. But even artistically, I think that, I mean, I just read the other day that less than 1% of podcast downloads are for kids.
Wow.
And I think that's probably because you do have to restrict your work a bit when uh-huh. you're producing for children.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the target age group, of course, the subject matter needs to be light, can't be too dramatic. You need to restrict your vocabulary, obviously, mm-hmm. again, depending on the age group, but you can't use complex words. Mm. You often need to repeat things to ensure the child is following along correctly.
So what was that?
I'm glad I caught that, because that would have been and episodes, you know, they need to have a common structure. You can't just throw an insane twist at the end because, you know, oh, you know that spoon we've been looking for this whole time? Well, it turns out it's your soul.
I'd love that. I think that's quite fun.
Yeah. I would assume that would probably traumatize a child.
Yeah, no, you're
what?
Right. Yeah, you're right.
So it's probably, you know, writers, producers tend to prefer to work without restriction, which is one of the beauties of audio drama, right? You want,
yeah.
It's the freedom of not needing to concern yourself with the execution and costs of visuals, not feeling restricted in that way.
Of course,
I think it's maybe be aware of that when you start, but yeah. I'll say at the same time that it's an absolute joy to work on, you know, from an artistic standpoint, it's so much fun. I mean, I'm genuinely laughing out loud yeah. while writing it, while hearing the performances, editing the comedic timing in there, adding silly sound effects and music. It's just ridiculously fun. So
cool. And do you actually work with children in your cast as well? I know I've heard a few of your bits, not all, and I just wonder if that.
Yeah, no, I've not different. Done that yet. Mm. I had lined up a few child actors for the fairy tree, yeah. and it turned out that I had left it too late. So that's something, maybe some advice, yeah. is that you do need, depending on the country, I suppose, but you do need to have prior approval. And mm-hmm. it's a good, I think, 3 weeks or 4 weeks or something to work with children. You have to sign some forms with the government or child
release
protection
forms.
Or something
yes.
like that.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So I had left that too late, which is a shame because their auditions were amazing. Child actors have really come a long way. But anyways, yeah, I hope to in the future, and I certainly will. I have the proper paperwork now.
Because that was a question actually that was asked, and I don't know if you would have an answer, but I don't know if you, did you actually get to direct them at all in the auditions as to what you wanted? Because the question that was asked was, what's it like, you know, what do you have to bear in mind directing children as opposed to adults?
I didn't get a chance to direct them, mm-hmm. Aside from the kind of the description of the role. Mm-hmm. The children that I was looking to hire, and this was remotely, they were directed by their parents. Right. I thought that was quite interesting. I didn't know that. But you could even hear it, because I always ask for the raw file, but you could hear the direction going on. And yeah, so I'm not quite sure what would have happened if it would have, we would have actually cast the child actors. And I don't know what happens at all if you're working with them in studio. I'm assuming the parent or guardian or something has to come along, to supervise, but they might help as well in the directing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, watch this space for your next set of extravaganzas to fathom what it is like. We'll get you back on to talk about that.
And would you ever be tempted to go into, or have you in fact done adult audio, for adults audio drama at all? You really keen on staying with children's?
No, I'm certainly not restricting the owl field to children's work. Mm-hmm. So I have some on my website already that are mainly for adults, they are for adults, I should say. I suppose I can't say too much right now, but no, I'm definitely not restricting myself, unless it, you know, goes insanely viral or something, then I might stick to it.
Yeah, because your soundscapes are beautiful. I mean, you know, just the whole realization of a place, and you know, from crackling fires and cozy houses with creaking floorboards to outdoor buzzing bees, you know, it's beautifully realized. So yeah, I can see that. It's inspiring.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Appreciate that.
I mean, talking in inspiration, I mean, what have you listened to inspire you to get into this in the first place?
Just generally producing or children's audio drama specifically?
Well, generally and children specifically. What are your ways in?
Well, the way in for me was actually 3D audio first. So I stumbled across some binaural audio, I think, on some, you know, really old stuff on YouTube maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And when I heard that, I was just, you know, okay, I have to start creating stories using this. And I didn't even actually know what audio drama was at the time. But yeah, and then I slowly realized, oh, there's all this great stuff out there. And then, I just went from there.
Did you have no background in radio or audio before that?
My background is audio, but it's mostly music.
Right.
I was in Montreal. I was in a band and my drummer had a studio. And so I learned kind of everything there, how to edit and all this stuff. And then I was doing some film scoring and production sound. Mm-hmm. And so I slowly learned the ins and outs of audio production that way. Mm-hmm. But in terms of kids stuff, I mean, the reason I produced the first Savvy and Wonder Hair episode was kind of to showcase the format, the Owlfield's format, over a number of different genres. So those first six Owlfield productions were all different genres, and that was to demonstrate that the 3D audio and first person experience worked across the board. Mm-hmm. And obviously, there's nothing wrong with focusing on a single genre, but I want the Owlfield to be a production company that can do anything rather than just a single story.
Yep.
And in truth, you know, at the same time, I wanted to produce these different genres to see kind of which one, you know, picks up. And so far, the children's one has been a hit. And with the market the way it is, you know, there's tons of growth potential. So that's
absolutely
why I've decided to continue that.
I think this one is definite avenue to be explored. I mean, the amount of people I've spoken to about, like, they wish they had things for long journeys on holidays and just to keep them quiet for 5 minutes while they're making dinner rather than sitting them in front of a telly.
Oh,
they can still play outside and listen. So yeah, I think there's such a massive potential for it to become a lot more popular.
In terms of audio drama, I was so surprised by that there isn't much out there, or there's a lot less than I expected. And it's not easy to find either. I mean, usually the best I could do is find something marked family friendly, which is close enough. But, you know, I had a really hard time finding anything that was made specifically or advertised specifically for a certain age group, like bedtime stories for toddlers or that kind of thing.
Yeah. Is there anything you'd recommend people listen to? Anything else that you think is worth a peek for inspiration? Other than your stuff, obviously.
I have to be honest, I'm not entirely sure why, but most audio entertainment for kids, you know, that isn't some kind of CD sing-along or something, is an audiobook version of a popular children's book. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of great stuff out there. Obviously, you know, the Harry Potter stuff is wonderful, but it's not audio drama. And I myself, I don't even know where there is audio drama. And I'm not saying that I'm the only one doing it. I just, it's really hard to find.
Yeah. No, I've struggled as well.
Yeah. I mean, I guess because most of the audio, the children's stuff is, you know, it's popular children's books made into audiobooks. So it's the publishers probably that maybe they don't want to spend too much on children's stuff, which, you know, you don't have to spend more as much as you would on adults anyways to entertain kids. Mm-hmm. So publishers are maybe not wanting to spend more on audio drama. But for those making podcasts, I mean, I don't think it would be more expensive. It's likely more, it's quicker to write as well. So I don't see any reason why podcast makers couldn't make more audio drama.
And finally, yeah, do you have any final top tips, or do you want to also tell us where you can find your work online?
Yeah, so the Owlfield website is owlfield.com, and the productions are up there. Mm-hmm. And Twitter is at Owlfield. Facebook is facebook.com/Owlfield. We've got a YouTube as well, or Facebook or Twitter, really, any of them. And yeah, I'd be happy to hear from you.
Lovely. Exciting. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your wise words of wisdom. And we look forward to seeing all your next adventures in the children's audio world, as I'm sure lots of people are very intrigued and hopefully inspired by what you're doing as well, which is truly excellent. So,
it really is superb.
thank you. I do hope people are inspired, because I do think there needs to be more in this space.
Yeah, I agree. Brilliant. Well, we'll watch this space for more from you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
For your time.
Thank you. Okay. Take care.
And here now is Jonathan Messenger from The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian. Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast to Jonathan Messenger. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's very, very exciting to speak to you. I know my son would probably rather be speaking to you than me, but I'm very excited to have you on the program. You're doing a lot of amazing things within children's audio, especially with The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes, the full title. Yes, that's right.
That's good. And what, first of all, kind of tempted you to try and make specifically audio for children?
Well, so I've had this idea for a while for a children's book that is basically the premise of Finn Caspian, which is that there are these friends, these kids who live on a space station, and they have robots that are their friends, and the robots get their kind of personalities from downloading classic children's books, essentially.
Yes.
And so I had this idea. I've been a writer for a long time, a fiction writer, and I had this idea. I've never written for kids before, but I have two kids of my own now and had been thinking about this idea. And then my oldest son, who actually is the editor of the show with me, Griffin, when he was about 4 or 5, he got obsessed with audiobooks. Mm. Became a huge fan of audiobooks. We'd listen to them in the car all the time. He'd listen to them before he went to bed. And so I started thinking about, I don't know, skipping the middleman, I guess, right? And so instead of doing a book, and then I also, as a huge podcast fan myself, I had been looking around for podcasts for him, and there weren't a lot at the time. This was a couple of years ago. Yep. Only a few, really, for kids at the time. And so I decided, you know, take a crack at making a podcast. And being able to take advantage of all the things that podcasts allow, like audience engagement and interaction with your audience and that sort of
thing. Yes, yes. And with regards to your love of podcasts, you kind of wanted to make those specifically for your son's age group, which was what at the time?
Well, when I started the show, he was six.
How did you start to shape that for him specifically? What would you give as advice for people who are aiming for that kind of age group of demographic in kicking off a podcast for kids?
Well, so I think that you have to, like anything, you know, if you're a writer, you have to be a reader. And if you're a filmmaker, you have to be a movie buff, right? And so if you're going to make things for kids, then you have to be consuming things for kids as well and seeing what's out there, seeing how kids interact and react to what they're reading or watching or listening to. And so I've done a lot of that. You know, I watch movies with my son. I read books every night to my son. And we listen to stuff as well in the car. And so I just kind of watch it, what he enjoys and what he doesn't enjoy, when he tunes out and when he tunes in. And actually, that's what I do.
Super.
I read every story to him before I record, and that's part of his editor duties.
And, I was going to say, I absolutely love that he's your editor. So how much input does he have into the kind of shape of your program?
He has a lot of input. So I tell him, you know, the basic ideas I have for the stories. I try to keep some things to myself so that he has some surprises. Yes. Even though he loves spoilers, I don't like to spoil things for him. And then I read the first draft of every story to him, and we talk about it afterwards, about what he likes, what he doesn't like, what if he has any ideas for where things could be improved or...
In-house market research. Perfect.
Yeah, right, 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 exactly. And there are times, too, where I'm working on a story and I say to him, you know, I'm really stuck at this point and I can't figure out why this would happen or what these aliens should be. And then we talk about it and he usually gives me some really good ideas.
Superb. And I guess that's within the genre of science fiction currently, really, isn't it? Do you kind of go outside of that genre and pull from other books and sources?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. We read all different kinds of books. I mean, both of our tastes tend towards kind of science fiction fantasy. So there's a lot of Narnia in the story. And this season that I'm working on right now, season three, is largely based on A Wrinkle in Time.
Yes. That's just kicked off this October, hasn't it? So,
yeah.
So yes, people have got time to catch up and then join in with this this season. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. But there are other books that we read that definitely play into it. Like we had a mini series right before this new season. Some of the story in there was inspired by the book How to Eat Fried Worms, which is kind of a classic children's book. And so we try to incorporate as much as and listeners send in some of their favorite books and I will read those with Griffin and try to come up with ideas based on those books as well.
See, that's what's beautifully endearing is that there is that potential to-ing and fro-ing. Can you tell us what you encourage your listeners to do to interact with you in the program?
Yeah, so I try to let the audience know that I feel like they are partners in making the show with me. And so I have a robot character on the show that hosts the show with me.
Yes.
And his name is Bebop. Yep. And the whole premise of Bebop is that his diet consists solely of art and he eats drawings and paintings and sculptures. And so I have the audience send in drawings so I can feed Bebop so he doesn't eat the art off of my walls. And then we have other things too, where sometimes when we introduce a new robot, we'll set up a poll and the audience can vote for, they give the names initially and then they vote for what the name of the robot should be.
Yes.
We do, Griffin runs something called Griffin Sound Club where kids record crazy sounds and they send them in and then I use them as sound effects in the story. I usually manipulate them quite a bit and then put them in.
So cool.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things. Yes. And then also sometimes I'll just put out, before this season, I just asked the audience, I said, if you have any ideas for planets or aliens or anything, send them my way and I'll see what I can do to incorporate them into the story. And it's great because you never have writer's block.
It's superb. I absolutely love it. And it's fueling their imaginations as well as keeping you young, eh?
Right, exactly.
And also they can ring in, can't they, to a specific voicemail, which again, just really lovely hearing these kids sort of obviously very excited to be ringing in and then they become part of the program as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So they tell jokes, they call up and they tell jokes. We have a little segment where they tell space-related jokes and that sort of thing. So yeah, I always try to get kids' voices onto the show as much as possible.
Yeah. And do you think that's important for children to hear other children?
I do think so.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of heaven. So Griff comes on at the end of my show at the end of every episode and critiques the show that just happened. And I think it's important for kids to hear that, to hear the whole idea for the show is I want to inspire kids to make things. So whether that's art or stories or whatever. And so the whole point of both Griffin at the end and Bebop in the front is to kind of, I don't know, kind of poke holes in the idea that I, Jonathan, as a writer of this show, am anything special, that they couldn't do the same thing too, right? Like that, you know, I mean, I can remember being a kid and thinking that authors and writers were kind of these untouchable, right? Yeah. These kind of unknowable characters. And so that's part of the idea is like, if you have kids' voices on the show, if you have the person who's ostensibly behind it sort of being good-naturedly ribbed, maybe then hopefully the kids can see themselves as equal and want to create things too.
And have the confidence to actually speak up and say, this is my idea.
Exactly.
If you like it kind of thing. Yeah, which I think is really valuable with confidence building, isn't it, for children?
Absolutely. It's a dangerous thing sometimes, I think.
Oh, well, yeah.
I got an email last night. I was writing an episode last night. I was up late. And I got an email from a listener. He wrote in and told me about several big mistakes I had made in the show. And I was like, it was a very sad email to get. But no, it was actually really funny. He was contending that some of the robots couldn't fly through space because space is a vacuum. And so we've had a little bit of back and forth about the science of it. And
it's giving actually you some science. Awesome.
Yeah, right. It's great. I love it.
So is it going to be an apology in the future?
Yeah, possibly. I've had to issue a couple of apologies in my time on this show.
No, I love that. I think that's great. And then the fact that, you know, that child has bothered to say this, I feel this is wrong. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
And have you encountered any problems or restrictions of working in this genre?
Well, I definitely think that you have to be thoughtful about how you phrase certain things and how you portray certain things. You know, so for instance, I mean, this is one thing that, and one of an early episode, one of the kids said, "Oh my God," instead of "Oh my gosh."
Right.
And I got a couple of emails from parents who were upset about that. And it was something that I've said for all 38 years of my life, pretty much, and never thought anything of it. And I actually went back and changed it because I felt like I didn't want a kid to not be allowed to listen to it because the parents were afraid of the content in it or something.
Yeah, yes.
And so I guess that's one thing. I think there's always a little bit of difficulty with getting the word out about it because people who listen to podcasts, you know, there's a lot of resources to find podcasts that are for adults, but kids, it's a little tougher. And the iTunes shop or the Apple Podcast shop is kids and family. And so that means that you might have, when people are searching in there, they might not be able to find what they want. They might find there are a lot of shows that are not for kids. There's schools, you know, shows for parenting podcasts and stuff
pregnant
like that.
Mummies.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
And so
yes.
The kind of the infrastructure that's set up for podcast discovery doesn't really serve kids that well.
And have you been very proactive because of that in other fields? I mean, how do you get your brand out there? Where do you put it out into the ether?
Yeah, so I try to connect with where parents are, you know, parenting blogs and that sort of thing. And but you know, the big thing that, so I also co-chair this organization called Kids Listen, which is a really amazing nonprofit organization of kid podcast creators.
Yes.
Where we kind of, it's like we're a community that we support each other and share best practices, and we're trying to set up kind of different standards around content and advertising and all that sort of thing. And we just released an app that's all the content on there are member podcasts. So it's all content that we know is good for kids and that kids can actually go on and use the app themselves to find shows that they might like.
Superb.
We actually did research last year about a variety of things around children's audio. And one of the things that we found, which is no surprise, was that 99% of the respondents said that the parents are the ones who found the podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yes.
Because they're the ones with the devices and everything.
Yes.
And that's totally fine. But we thought it might be fun to have and good for kids to have an app where a kid could search for something that they liked.
Yeah. Well, this is what my daughter's craving at the minute. And it's like we have kind of given her access to some, but it's rather restricted because, you know, you never know what podcasts children could get hold of otherwise. Right. So what's that app called? Is that called Kids Listen?
Yeah, the app is called Kids Listen. It's just for iOS right now. And we're hoping that if it gets a little traction with that, then we'll expand to Android as well.
Fantastic. And what's the age range for kids programs on there? Is it the whole kind of shebang?
Yeah, so it's basically preschool, so about 3 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, we have some shows for middle school age as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, yes, everyone have a look out for that one and download it straight away, quick.
Great, yeah. That's great. How old is your daughter?
She's 11 and my son is 8. Great. Yes, he's just coming around. I mean, I was talking to a friend about this, that we kind of were brought up with albums of records when I was younger. Then I started to get into CDs. So Roald Dahl, pretty much everybody had a massive amount of Roald Dahl in my circles.
Right, and
perhaps, you know, a few sprinkling of other stories on CDs. So, yeah, and now I think there is just this on the cusp of realizing that there is such a lot that can be made for children that is not being made, apart from by people like your good self and a few pockets of other people. Now, I have seen, you know, I think as in the top 20 in the kids app today, I think we fathomed there was about sort of 12 audio kids shows in amongst the pregnancy and otherwise kind of things.
Right. But,
yeah, it looked healthier.
It's got, to Apple's credit, they've done work in that regard.
Yeah.
They really have. There's now a link that I think if you go to applepodcasts.com/kids, it'll bring you to a page of in iTunes of just kids shows. And so they're aware of the issue and they've been working with us at Kids Listen about it, and they've been really great.
When you actually are launching that podcast out there, so you've just started your season 3, what kind of other support are you getting from other places? Are there any other kind of networks or websites or Facebook groups or so on that you kind of use to help you get your marketing done?
Not so much. You know, I kind of do it the old-fashioned way with press releases out to various publications. So, you know, my background is I worked in journalism for years, and so
the drill.
right. So I do that, and I send releases out to, like I said, parenting blogs and parenting sections of newspapers and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a member of a lot of different podcast groups on Facebook that are all really great, but either they're pretty geared towards not really wanting people to self-promote.
Yes.
Which makes sense, right? Because you can't really let podcasters loose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of had to restrict it, yeah. Yeah. I just think as the groups grow, that makes sense. And I think we in the audio drama production podcast group have gone down to just Friday promos that people hopefully find out quite quickly that that's where everything goes. Just because, otherwise you would not find all the other interesting articles because you'd be peppered with, 50...
Right.
Amazing podcasts, but you'd lose the content. So, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I do find that Twitter has been helpful. And being a part of Kids Listen has been huge too, because we do a lot of cross promotion of each other's shows on Twitter. We always share each other's stuff, and we do something 3 or 4 times a year where we all make an episode, or as anybody who wants to in the group makes an episode around a certain theme, and then we kind of plug each other's shows that are on that theme. And that's always really fun because the shows are so different, and to see what people do with those themes is really fun.
Yeah. And how is that financed? Like, are you currently at a phase where you're now on season 3? Have you started to actually make any money from your podcasting?
Well, so no.
I was hoping, crossing fingers for you.
Actually, we're going to next week, hopefully, start having some sponsorship on the show.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I've been very kind of slow to do that, to think about how I want to do it and to talk with the audience about what would make sense for them.
Yeah.
And so the model that I've stumbled on right now, and it's all kind of an experiment, is sort of in the United States, what we call like a PBS model, which is like a title sponsor. So you might have a short pre-roll ad and a short post-roll ad just saying kind of like, this episode is brought to you by such and such.
Yep.
But not having the kind of typical podcast ad where, you know, the host talks for 3 minutes about how much they love stamps.com or something
that.
Because I don't want, you know, like I am in a lot of ways a character on my show and I don't want that
it's a version of
character
you, isn't it?
To all of a sudden start. I don't want that person to start pitching stuff, like selling stuff to the audience. You know what I mean? And so the rules that I've set up have been that the ads will be clearly to the adults in the room, not to the kids, nothing. So we're not going to do like selling toys and say you should play that sort of thing. And that we're not going to do mid-roll ads because there's not really a good place to do that in the middle of the story. So that's sort of what we're doing. But, you know, in terms of monetization, the advertising thing is really an experiment just to see if we can kind of do it as a sustaining kind of a thing. But the way, about 6 months ago, I joined up with some guys who formed a company called Gen Z. And Gen Z are the ones who made a show called The Unexplainable Disappearance of Mars Patel.
Yeah, that's done which very is a, well, hasn't it? Yes.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal show. And so I created with them a kind of, for lack of a better term, like an imprint of Gen Z called Gen Z Kids to make stuff that's, because they make shows that are more for middle school or middle grade.
Yeah.
And I make shows for kind of younger elementary school age. And so the business model there with Gen Z is that we really, we want to make great audio shows for kids that then have the potential, those subsidiary rights of those shows have the potential to be optioned, say, for a book or a movie or a TV show or something like that.
Super.
And that's part of how we're approaching it. And so their show, Mars Patel, actually was optioned to be made into a TV show. And
great.
And I won't knock on wood because that's annoying on a podcast, but knock on wood that it...
And don't knock the mic either, but yeah.
right. And then for Finn Caspian, we're exploring that as well. But the big thing right now for me is that I am working on a book version of the show.
Oh, great.
A series of books, actually. And so hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll go out to publishers with that. And that's always been the kind of plan as a means to monetize the show, is not necessarily making money off the show, but then spinning things off of the show as well.
Will that include kids' artwork from people who've sent things in and all sorts?
It's possible. I have to see if the publisher is open to it, but I thought that'd be cool if we could do that.
Excellent.
I was going to say maybe we could get some kids some royalties or something. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be cool? Yes. Right into your podcast. You'll make money.
right.
No, the podcasters won't, but you.
Right, exactly.
I mean, with regards to the whole bringing people on board, I know that people will be yearning to know what kind of steps you've gone to try and get that sponsor. Is that something you can talk about? You don't have to name who they are, but just the kind of places you've gone to find that.
First of all, I'll say that I've been very lucky in that the profile of the show has risen enough that a couple places have reached out. And so I didn't have to actually do the initial push.
Fantastic.
But I actually did contact a woman named Jessica Kupferman. I don't know if you know her or not. She runs a group called She Podcast.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah.
Super.
And she also has a podcast ad agency, for lack of a better term, called JK Media. And she is just so smart and so great. And so I just reached out to her and asked if she'd like to work with me on it. And so that's the ones that have reached out. Individually, I didn't actually pursue those. I just don't have experience in that field and felt at sea a little bit. And so I'm working with her so that she's kind of handling a lot of that. And I couldn't be more excited about
that. Fantastic. And that is brilliant, kind of advocate of the whole audio drama community. I feel that, you know, is people helping other people. So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And what kind of lineage of time has that taken you to get to this point where you're about to? So what kind of time processes?
So the show launched in August of last year, so it's been about 14 months. I think we probably could have done it earlier if I had wanted to pursue it or not. I really was the great thing about podcasts is that you can like week to week change things up, right? And so a lot, I feel like I've been experimenting a lot over the last year, and mostly the last year has for me has been building the audience, having fun with it, getting into a groove with it, and worrying about the money kind of secondary. And, and so that's, so I think that if somebody kind of had their act together more than I did, maybe they wouldn't have to wait 14 months for it to come together.
I mean, so it's principally you. Are there other people involved around you other than your son in making it happen?
No.
Superman.
No, it's just me. Yeah, right, right, right. Well, and now that I'm working with Gen Z, I could get support more for the show if I wanted to, but I'm a control freak.
It's mine. I'm nobody touching it. I know I'm a megalomaniac myself, quite gently. But yeah, and I guess the flavour of your show as well is for entertainment, really, and to incite that imagination and spark of enlightenment of general relationships, I guess, isn't it, between these different characters. Would you say that there's any educational aspect to your show?
Yeah, definitely. So my joke always is that kids will learn nothing from my show because so much of the content that's made for kids is geared towards education, you know, and so my little joke is always that you come here if you don't want to learn anything. but actually the idea is, you know, obviously the kind of support discussion around the books that inspire the show, the idea, the hope is that kids will, if they love the show, they'll also love those books and help foster a love of reading around it. But then also in those discussions that I have with Griffin at the end of the episode, not every single episode, but I would say maybe every other episode, I try to discuss quickly some element of storytelling or writing. So we've talked about like why cliffhangers work, and we've talked about how characters are formed and that sort of thing. So different kind of writing and storytelling techniques. I talk a little bit about that on the show so that if kids are interested in writing or just, you know, I think that it's such an interesting thing if you're somebody who loves stories or, you know, to learn a little bit about that, oh, there are actually decisions being made about where these stories go and reasons behind those decisions. Yep. And so that's, I try to discuss that sort of thing so that when kids are making up their own stories, they also make those decisions, you know.
And is there any potential for children to actually write bits of script for your show as well? Is there things that they, I don't know, monologue for Bebop about something? Or I don't know, have you ever used actual written work from children?
No, I haven't done that yet.
Okay. I'll give you an idea.
Yeah, right.
But okay, no, I'm just intrigued because I just think, yeah, I absolutely love that they are very enchanting characters that, you know, you conjure up. And yeah, I can see how it's inspiring.
Thanks.
So yeah, keep up the good stuff.
Thanks.
I mean, talking of inspiring, what has inspired you? Do you listen to podcasts?
I do listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of children's podcasts with my sons in the car, and I listen to a lot of other podcasts. I really love, I listen to a lot of audio dramas, for instance, and I listen to a lot of cultural programs, like a lot of the Radiotopia shows. I enjoy the Radiotopia shows.
There's
quite
a lot of stuff on there. Yeah.
And then I think I worked for 8 years as a book critic. And so books have always been a huge part of my life. And so certainly draw inspiration from there. And then a little bit of music too. I always like to say that I think that The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian is one long homage to the Flaming Lips in some way.
Lovely.
Because I've always loved that band and they're very inspirational to me.
Awesome. Have you got them ever on the show? You should do that.
I should. I bet I would be willing to bet that they'd be into it because they
jump on it.
They're crazy guys.
They take over.
Yeah, right.
I'd love that episode.
I just remember being a kid when their music and first encountering their music and just finding it so fun and weird, but also kind of accessible. And that's kind of how I want my show to be. I want kids to listen to it and like understand everything, but be and think it's really fun and just be like, wow, this is really weird, you know, and just be kind of blown away by it. That's kind of that effect is what I want to have.
Awesome. And as far as sort of future is concerned, obviously you're in season three currently. I guess you've got an arc for that. Mm-hmm. How quickly do you work, in as much as do you work a whole season out and then chop it up into 20-minute episodes that we now find? Or?
Yeah, so I sketch out the whole season. I outline the whole season episode by episode. Mm-hmm. And then I'll write. So each season I sit down and say, I'm going to write the whole season before we start. So all I have to do is produce once it's going. Uh-huh. And then I never do that. And so I end up usually writing as I'm going. But okay. Also, because there's a lot of audience interaction and I want to leave it open-ended. So I have episodes that are all planned out right now.
Yep.
But based on what I hear from the audience, and there's also a lot of another element of the show that's interactivity, is that different episodes have kind of puzzles in them. And so I like to put those in. And sometimes the responses from the kids to those kinds of riddles and puzzles help inform what's coming next. So I leave it somewhat open-ended as I go.
So that is kind of like choose your own adventure, isn't it, really? I mean, it's dictated by the reader.
Yeah, a little bit.
As to what happens next, rather than you having option A and option B.
Right. Right.
They come up with that as grand. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Superb.
Yeah.
And the episodes are around 20 minutes.
Right.
Some are that we listen to are, you know, 5 minutes, some are 30 minutes to an hour. Why did you choose on that kind of time slot for your podcast?
That was purely a matter of reading the stories to Griffin and watching when he started to pick up the Legos or something like that. You know?
Bored daddy.
I mean, like, okay, this seems to be about, and it's also probably because I have to listen to it so much and I narrate it, it's about as much as I can stand in my own voice at a time as well, probably.
I'm with you.
But we did do a kids listen in our study. We asked about what length of episode kids preferred. And I should pull up the study. I don't have it in front of me right now. But I could say that anybody who wants to access it, if you go to kidslisten.org, it's right there on the front page. I could be citing this incorrectly, but we found that kids listened up to 40 minutes, but that somewhere around 15 to 20 minutes seemed to be the kind of sweet spot.
Yes. I think it's the same with adults, really, to be honest, isn't it?
Probably.
But yeah, no, I did look on your Kids Listen website and there is some really fascinating information. So if you are wanting to work in this kind of area, do have a good look on there, because I think there's some really fascinating information that you guys have found out. So definitely worth a look. I guess finally, really, just looking at your inspiration for others, why should people with imaginations and the determination to get their stories out do a podcast for children?
Well, I can say for me, honestly, I've never been involved with a project that has been more creatively satisfying than this one.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a while, I had a very kind of middling career as a literary writer, which is maybe redundant, I guess. Uh-huh. But like the feedback that you get from kids is amazing. The engagement you have with your audience is amazing. I think that's true about podcasts in general. I think that that there's something about the audio medium that just brings you very close to the host of a show, no matter whether you're talking about WTF with Marc Maron or you're talking about Molly Bloom, the host of Brains On. Yeah. I think you just kind of feel like you get to know them. And
most of them are very nice.
Yeah, they are. They are. I haven't encountered any bad ones yet.
They all deserve a pint bought for them down the local pub.
Right. And I just think that it's a very satisfying thing to make things for kids and know that if a kid likes it, they're going to own it. You know what I mean? They're going to love it. They're going to really care about it. They're going to really appreciate it. And it's just such a great kind of back and forth you have with them, where you're pouring your heart into a project and they're saying, yeah, give me more, you know, whereas instead of pouring your heart into a short story and everybody reading it being like, yeah, that was all right. I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Give you a new audience and perspective. Yeah.
A
question that Fiona and I were talking about was you as the producer and writer of that, as your child who you specifically done this for grows older, will you kind of make your projects grow with that child? So what's next for Finn Caspian? Does he continue to, or they continue to go on adventures? Are there other things planned that perhaps Griff is more interested in now as well that you can perhaps pursue? What are your plans?
It's a good question. It's like the whole Harry Potter thing, right? Where each book kind of grows with the audience. And yeah. I'll take any opportunity I can to compare myself to J.K. Rowling.
Do it. Yeah. Who has better hair? I don't know.
that question is always the other person when it comes to me. I think that Finn Caspian is the time span that's happening with Finn Caspian is pretty short. So it's not going to grow much and turn or age up much, because the kids aren't aging up much. You know, like the first mm-hmm. three seasons happen over the span of a couple of months or something like that. And yes. and I really do yeah. love this age that I'm working for. And so, I'm working on kind of new shows for that age group as well. And then
Super.
Griffin, as he gets older, I also have some shows that I hope. So like I said, like with Gen Z, they're working for an older audience. I'm working in a younger audience. And we do have some shows that I think really will kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah.
I also think that adults make too much of that gap sometimes. You know what I mean? Like sometimes uh-huh. we tend to think, oh yeah, like this is for 6-year-olds. That's for 8-year-olds. That's for 10-year-olds. But like the 6 and the 10-year-old will get different things out of it. And so that, I hope yeah. that's what I'm doing with the show, is putting things in there that different age groups can get different elements out of.
Yeah, yeah, superb. Yeah. And so where can people find this work other than obviously putting the title into their favorite podcatcher? Are there any other places to find you and Finn Caspian?
Sure. So at finncaspian.com and on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, it's all at Finn Caspian.
Simple. Good work.
Yeah. And then if you want to find out more about Gen Z shows, because we're working on a bunch of different shows, and obviously, like I said, Mars Patel, that's gen-z.fm. And you can find out more there.
Mm-hmm. And you specifically are on Twitter as well. Can people
Absolutely.
Get hold of you if they're inspired and want to
yep.
to send you
yep.
pictures of a non-adult nature?
And that's, I'm Johnny Mess. That's my old high school nickname.
Cool.
It's JonnyMess at Johnny Mess on Twitter.
Super.
And then I'd also really encourage anybody who's interested in either listening to audio for kids or making audio for kids to check out both the Kids Listen app and kidslisten.org. It's really, I mean, the joke that I made a little while ago about Kids Listen is that when I was making the show originally, I felt like I was at a party and didn't know anybody and was really awkward. And then I found Kids Listen, and it's like you walk out into the backyard and there all your friends are sitting around the fire or whatever. And they're just wonderful people. And I think it's worth checking out that organization.
Sounds fantastic. Yes. And are you going to be touring Finn Caspian across the land? Do some live shows?
I do want to. I really want. I did a live show in June here in Chicago that was so fun. It was so great. And so I really want to, I'm hoping that when the, if and when the first book comes out, that's the plan is to do a big tour around that.
Exciting. Cause I saw on one of the podcast forums today, somebody saying, I've got this venue, who wants to come tour here? And I think this should happen a lot more often. I think, that there are so many shows that I think would at least perhaps make a few pennies from having some bums on seats in a theatre, where sending it out into the world, you make pretty much nothing unless you're able to jump on the various business model bandwagons that some of the more successful have.
Right. And if you're making stuff for kids and you are kind of building in those interactive elements to your show in some way, then what better way to do that than to interact with a live audience?
Absolutely.
I think it's a very easy, sort of simple transition from podcast to live, because you are already making something with the audience interaction in mind.
Yes, you know? Yes, it's very exciting. And we've got a few things planned for Audio Drama Production Podcast to hopefully expand to a couple of festivals across Britain next year.
Oh, that's great.
I would hope that at least one of those festival days would be child-specific. So we would get, as we would with the adult shows, potentially kids up to do the Foley and kids up to do some lines. And I hope it would, in my head, it's going to be amazing. But we'll see what happens. So, I think, you know, if you can get in front of that live audience and inspire their love of the oral experience, then yes, hooray, is all I can say. Well, thank you so much for giving your time to us today. And I'm very excited to see what happens next with Mr. Cuspid, as is my son, who's enjoying it very much. So, if he wasn't asleep, he would probably sleepily say hello, and you're amazing. So, and to Griff too, it's very exciting.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But, you know, huge thanks to you for giving up your time today. It's been really very lovely to talk to you. And I am absolutely certain that people will be inspired by what you've said. And hopefully, you know, drop Jonathan a line if there's any things you want to fathom, discuss or find out about children's audio writing and producing. And please do pop things on our forum as well if you've had any thoughts or concerns or worries that you kind of want to explore as well.
Oh, and I should say that my email is earth@finncaspian.com.
Marvellous. So I'll put all of those on the show notes. And thank you so much.
All right,
thank you. Happy creating. Take care.
Thanks very much.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to Michelle LaFrance and Jonathan Messenger. Do check out those shows. We'll have all of the details on the website.
Yes.
And of course, if you want to contact us, Sarah.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'd like you to sing it today, seeing as it's your...
podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
She done it good. Awesome. Well done. Very good. Very impressive. I'm going to phone you up and ask you to remind me what it is when I forget. And yes, if you need any further exciting things to look at regarding podcasting and all its wonders, go straight to www.thepodcasthost.com. And there's some amazing articles, for example, on where to host your podcast, isn't there, Fiona?
Absolutely. That includes details on what is a media host and why do I need one? And can't I just host my podcast on my website?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to which is obviously not a great idea. So they've asked very useful details from Audioboom, Blueberry, Buzzsprout, Fireside, Libsyn, Podbean, Spreaker and Zencast.
Ooh, that's an A to Z of fun things and more in between. So yes, do go and have a little search and hunt around. There's so much on there that I think you find very useful.
Yeah, and it's something that comes up a lot, actually, doesn't it, where to host. So this is a very comprehensive guide to all that. So do have a look.
Yes, do. And this bit's a bit strange because this is Fiona's last episode. And so we do hope to have you on, obviously, as a guest in future, I suppose.
That would be lovely.
With your wonderful expertise in the world of audio drama. But we do have to leave her here in the Tower of London at the end of this episode. Apparently she's allowed a laptop and a microphone and maybe a door, maybe if she's good, an internet connection. So hopefully you'll be making some amazing things in the future. Is that your plan?
I do hope so. Yeah. I'm going to be working on a play and a couple of audio drama scripts that I'd like to do.
Sweet.
And doing some audiobooks as well.
So.
But it's been lovely being here. It really, really has.
Yes.
And I'll definitely still be in touch. I'm never leaving, Sarah.
You better.
Never.
You better stay. No, I'm convinced that, yes, you will definitely be back as much as possible. And obviously we'll be soldering the forums for exciting things to add and hopefully keeping everyone in order.
But in 2 weeks' time, in your next episode, who is hosting with you, Sarah?
Well, I'm very excited to say that we've got the amazing Rick Coast, who obviously is one of the bastions in our group of beautifully created audio dramas for children. And alongside him, lined up to co-host are folks like Zachary Fortescon from The Orphans, Beth Eyre from Wooden Overcoats and Snatchback, James Lever from What's the Frequency and Greater Boston, and so many more. So I'm very excited to at least be able to continue, because without them, I think I would find it very difficult to trolley on by myself.
And what a lineup. Yes. That is absolutely fantastic.
Yes, I am very excited. And what we're trying to do is match up people with expertise for that specific episode. So watch this space for some more fun things, and do keep tuning in. I know you're massive Fiona fans, but don't leave the show just because she's not here anymore.
I don't think that'll be a problem.
Oh, I don't know. People will miss you.
But you also have a new editor working with you, I believe.
Yes, I'm so, so excited. On the Sound Network Facebook forum, there's a wonderful lady called Anne-Marie Luff. She's worked for the BBC, for the radio for over 10 years, and I'm just going to read some spiel. She's currently a producer for Radio 4 and Radio 4 Extra. Her original passion has always been drama. She grew up wanting to be an actress and then realised she hated being the centre of attention and instead has found her skills lie behind the scenes, stroke glass, playing with sound effects and music and making others sound great. So she's amazing.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm very excited to have her on board. And so, yes, she will be doing the fine-tuning of the editing that I mess up. I mean, do in the first place. And I'm really grateful to her to jump on board. So we're hoping that the team, obviously executively produced by Matthew McLean and Robert Cudmore, will also still be very much involved in the process and development of things. So yes,
wonderful.
It's exciting. Cool. And on that note, I don't know if you'd like to do this plea for us, seeing as I have tried, but people haven't seemed to respond so well.
No, the plea is Sarah is doing something on home setups. So your microphone and interface or whatever setup you use. We're looking for people who identify as women. So if you would like to send something in, we only have 3 at the moment. So please, please do send your setup. And if you're not sure anything, but I've only been doing it a short time and I don't know if mine is good enough or I don't know, then please read something on imposter syndrome and send something in. Okay, please, please do not feel that you do not have something valuable to add, because you do, definitely.
100%. And I'm currently not looking to people just to deluge me with information and recordings. I am firstly looking for interest, and then we'll compose a list of people who we will hopefully be using on the programmes, which should be over 2 episodes, looking at various different setups and hopefully co-hosting Misha Stanton with lots of amazing advice from him as well on technical things. So lots to look forward to, I think.
And if you do have any of that, or indeed any other comments, do email us again on that email address, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Beautifully said. And finally, it's October, as we know, and right now, the 11th hour audio extravaganza is happening as we speak. There are people sweating buckets and going out into strange abandoned buildings and forests and perhaps even basements to create some wonderful horror for you. And I just wanted to say that it's not too late to get involved if you can make something in 21 days. Very simply, it's an event. If you look at 11thhouraudio.com, 11 being the number, not the spelling of the word, you should be able to find out all the information you need to jump on. And otherwise, look out for all of those created works on the 30th of October. And why is the 30th of October such a beautifully important day, Fiona?
It's Halloween.
That's the 31st. But the 30th of October is...
Oh, God! Sorry, it's World Audio Drama Day. Oh, dearie me. I'm sorry. Sarah will tell you dates are not my strength.
So World Audio Drama Day, yes, is being celebrated by lots of different groups independently working across the world, coming together to create some horror work for you. So people like the folks from Audio Oblivious are working together. People like names like Steve Schneider and Monique and Matthew Boudreau and Tanya Milodovic and Neil Gustin and Kareem Cromfrey and Richard Brooks and Beth Eyre are all going to play on the various amazing shows that will be working, as well as the beautiful and amazing MJ Cogburn and Friends. So, yes, there's a lot going on. So please jump on there if you'd like.
Do. The day before Halloween. And finally, thank you so much to all our Patreons. We really appreciate your generosity
to
keep our show going.
Yes.
And our trailer today is William Mayer's Fire on the Mound, where siblings must befriend their father's killer to stop a sorcerer.
This one's
probably for slightly not for the weenie ones.
Yes, yeah, so switch off now if you're under the age of 21. Because it's too scary, even if you're 18 or 19.
Thank you, Sarah. It has been a joy to be with you. It really has worked with you on this.
You're simply amazing. Yeah, no, I can't believe this is the last one. What's happening? So, yes, we must converse daily anyway, just for fun, even though we didn't every day.
We will. Absolutely.
Well, happy creating to you, Fiona. You are absolutely astounding as a creative and have helped me. You even made me a badge. So you made me a badge for editing what I got, for trying very hard and hopefully, you know.
You're doing brilliantly.
Hopefully I'll continue to develop, and I will definitely be asking you for help because you're an amazing teacher as well. So thank you, buddy.
Oh, gosh.
And,
thank you. Yes. And all the very best with the new episodes. I'm so looking forward to putting my feet up with a cup of tea and listening. It'll be lovely. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I promise. The chill of the tundra filled his lungs. You promise? Pekra asked. Have I ever broken my word to you?
The great Labasu had appeared.
Adi-Ratari.
The beast turned eastward, brusquely crushing all in its path.
Yes, said Pekra. It was a promise when you held my hand. It was a promise when you took me fishing.
Yira!
Kriya shouted. The storm renewed.
Hear the thunder, Dume. Soon you will drink deeply of your own blood. I wonder if you will find the taste to your liking.
It was a promise when we explored the forest together. It was a promise when you took care of me when I was sick.
The Forlorn came at Matillon slowly. Only their hollowed eyes conveyed their hopes of vengeance.
I am the unborn king, and my master is death.
All the same promise.
What promise?
A promise you would not die.
This is Fire on the Mound, a podcast novel written by William J. Meyer, read by Steve Rudolph, music by William Seegers. The fire does not come from the mind. Learn more at fireonthemound.com.